Thank you for joining us for Dialogue Out Loud. My name is Teresa Wellborn, Dialogue's poetry editor. Today we are in conversation with two poets from our winter 2024 family issue, Simon Peter Egertson and Kevin Klein. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Teresa.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you. So I'll start with a brief bio of each of you. Simon, so I see that you were born in Kansas, raised in Utah, schooled in Virginia and England. You wrote your first poem when you were 7?
Yes.
however, you came very late to poetry after an entire career in international health?
Yes.
Okay. Is it true that you like to renovate Victorian houses? And at some point, we might find you paddling Chinese dragon boats?
Yes, indeed. I've done 2 Victorian homes.
Oh, my God. That's so cool. I'm trying not to fangirl, so I'm just going to... I think that's pretty cool. You had degrees in literature, language, and law. And according to our dialogue notes, you identify as an Anglo-Saxon gnome.
Sometimes.
You know, I read that and I thought, wait, am I reading this right? So I love the humor that I'm getting from, yeah, your personality.
I think I sent that in the dialogue once, and the editor said, we want something more staid, so they eliminated the phrase.
Okay, well, we appreciate it. I also feel akin to your fascination with language and wonder. So you are widely published starting back in 2007. For about nearly 20 years, appearing in various and sundry publications, including the Contemporary West, Atlanta Review, Spoon River Poetry Review. You also have 2 poetry chapbooks, one about 10 years apart, is that correct? One, Memories as Contraband, 2014, and Hawking Come Close to Finding God in 2023. Hey. I did have a quick question before I move on to the bio for Kevin. I understand that you met Stephen Hawking.
Yes, I got to know him when I was a student at Cambridge many years ago.
What? That's so cool. We might have to carry the conversation on after this podcast because I'm fascinated with him as a person. I have family members that are deeply fascinated in him and have read a lot of his books. So.
Or.
I'm going to pause on those questions and I'll come back. So
okay.
Great. Okay. Thank you. All right. So we're going to move on to Kevin. Hey, Kevin. Hello. Hello. You have been published in Dialogue Prior, mm-hmm. Also the winner of the BYU Studies Poetry Contest in 2024. So last year, and also published in Mothering and Irientum. Okay. And we see that you are an educator.
That's right. To teach 6th grade.
Oh, cool. Okay.
It's elementary school in our district. So I get to teach a bit of everything and I love it.
That's lovely. Okay. Excellent. And then I see that your poetry career is not brief either. From what I can gather, you started getting published back in 1998.
Yeah, that's right.
I mean, that's like, we're looking at some time there. That's great. And one poem that I found fascinating was The Tomb Guard Arlington Cemetery. And that was, I believe, maybe your first published poem?
I think it was. Yeah, I was a grad student at the time. And that was in Irientum, maybe, back when it was a print magazine or a BYU publication. Yeah.
Very cool. All right. Well, thank you. We're so happy to have both of you. Okay. So what we do in our podcast is we ask, one poet a question and we bounce ideas off one another, share some quotes and thoughts. And we'll start with Simon. So Simon, in your poem that was in the winter issue, A Night Prayer at, is it Bing Dong?
Yes, Bing Dong.
Bing Dong, okay. What we found was that ritual unspoken assumptions in your poem, references to family. I liked that there was chanting, references to a glow in the atmosphere there and shadows, different thoughts on that. So how do you feel like your poem speaks to ritual?
Well, it is in fact a ritual, and it's a scene that I actually witnessed while I was working in Vietnam and have elaborated a little bit more on. And I sat in that temple for quite a while that evening and watched a lot of people come and go. But then, in fact, the two women who came caught my attention. The second part that is beyond ritual in this is that it occurs near Tet, which has a rather infamous sense of meaning in the U.S. because of the Tet Offensive during the war. So there's a what I try to convey or try to overcome here is the sense of that untoward happening at Tet, how this is really the essence of the ritual of Tet. In fact, we are within a day or two of the beginning of the Lunar New Year in I guess they call it East Asia now, or Southeast Asia.
I believe that might have been even yesterday, right? The 29th?
Right.
I think.
Exactly.
From what I understand, Tet is the most important celebration in Vietnamese culture. And is that in your experience what you found?
It is, though. There's an interesting aspect to it. My younger son, his girlfriend, and he lives in New York City. She is from the Vietnamese extraction. And when I say extraction, I mean it literally in the sense that they were boat people. Her parents came to the U.S. during the war. She was visiting here over the Christmas holidays, and we talked a little bit about Tet. And she knew about most of the rituals involved in Tet, but some of them she didn't know about. So I wasn't even able to clarify with her whether what I'd found in my research was in fact something that happened, like giving the sprigs of spring peach blossoms, for example.
Mm-hmm. Wow, this is fascinating. Simon, could you please read a part of your poem? You have it handy.
Sure.
Do you mind going down to where it starts? Three repetitions will be enough this evening.
Three repetitions will be enough this evening. May we be filled with loving kindness. May you be well. May we be peaceful and at ease. May you be whole. Their waving reverence made each time the incense less. They leave an open set of spring flowers at each modest altar. The surprise of pink peach blossoms, Hai Lo. And two Vietnamese pears, the grin-shaped bold on the white of smooth porcelain. The light left over ricochets off a brushed brass urn, marks the presence of two suns, an earth and a moon in one place. Finished, they whirl. Drop their temple money at Lord Buddha's feet, vanish through the door like wisps of ash blown to the side by shuffling breeze. Taking with them a square of sticky rice for their own good luck, they race home before the 12 toll bell strikes midnight. Dong! And it locks themselves out until dawn. Safe inside at home, they warm a pot of fragrant jasmine tea, ready the gifts, single sprigs of spring blossoms, wait for tomorrow's first visitors, practice the ritual Tet reading. Tomorrow the narcissus will bloom in Tu Duc Mot.
Thank you. So just to focus on a few stanzas here, I really appreciate your use of alliteration, especially starting with this. The light left over ricochets off a brushed brass urn.
Yep.
And then presence in place. And then you jump down the third to the last stanza, single sprigs of spring blossoms. So I find so much joy in reading poetry. And Kevin, both you and Simon's poems brought myself a lot of joy in finding different ways that you elicited feeling, emotion, and just a sense of culture and of being. So thank you so much, Simon. I also wanted to, you're welcome. And then your poem, I don't know if you know Gary Snyder, but his poetry came to mind, Simon, when I was going through especially this poem. So, Kevin, do you mind starting by reading your poem, Allergies?
Sure. Allergies for Janet. On Mother's Day, it snows in our backyard, the kind that grows on cottonwoods and makes my nose itch inside the nostrils, pinch half closed at the bridge, but still drip. And as it blows into the grass, the cotton that is, I see your clothes and the pet hair stuck in them, all those rabbits, ducks, dogs, and cats that I suppose you never thought about wanting, but chose for your kids, the way a tree knows its seeds will fall and makes pillows for their landing when the wind throws them beyond even your branches' shadows.
Hey, thank you. This poem, the last several lines starting with all those to the very end, I don't even have words. I'm a nerd with poetry and I often will get emotional, but I feel like the cadence and the everything from the diction to what I feel like is an inevitable ending just makes a beautiful poem. So thank you so much, Kevin. It hits a stride there in those last lines, and I think it's magical. So I wanted to speak to the setting of the poem is the backyard, and also to the interesting thing with Simon, both your poem and Kevin's, is that you're speaking of a female experience from, looks like, you know, an outside experience for a male writing a female experience. So how do you feel, what are your thoughts of honoring mothers and how the female experience can, from your experience, Kevin, affect you as a poet?
Oh, I suppose this poem was inspired by a mother whom I admired very much. She had four kids. I wrote this back when I was part of the Big Brothers, Big Sisters program at BYU. And so, it's very autobiographical. This mother didn't have many resources. But the kids had, she always made sure they had plenty of animals and they wanted these animals and they were, you know, they brought that comfort to them. That many animals, and literally they had rabbits, ducks, and dogs and cats, not all at the same time, but she was able to, she gave up maybe that kind of sense of order and having a house, well, with that many animals in it, you can imagine what it was like, but she made that sacrifice for them to have that sort of sense of comfort that would carry them, you know, beyond from when they left the house.
Cool. Okay. So what I understand from your experience is, you know, you were able to view the sacrifice of a woman and how that changed everything in her children's experience. It imbued them with, you know, fun times and really added to the sense of family. So one thing I want to state as well is that both of these poems take place in the setting of a garden, or Kevin, in your sense, in a backyard, which conceivably could be garden-like or Eden-like. I want to share a quote by Hermann Hesse. It's the entire simple cycle of life that so much preoccupies men and which all religions interpret with veneration takes place unambiguously, rapidly, and in the silence in a garden. So I think, Kevin, in your case with your poem, there's no dialogue, right? It's an observation that you're seeing, and it's the whole world can be taking place in that Eden of that backyard of this woman and her children. So, right. So I guess it's like the microscopic view, macro to micro, that you can see so much in that experience. Do either of you have questions for one another, Kevin or Simon?
I have one for Kevin after having heard his poem. you seem to be able to achieve something I have striven for but never got. When Teresa mentions cadence and rhythm and the sort of rounding off of what would normally be lines in poetry, I admire what you've done there. Just to listen to it is to listen to somebody's work that in my mind is very artful. I congratulate you on what you've done.
Thank you, Simon. I appreciate that. Yeah, the The form, there's a Robert Frost poem called The Rose Family. And in that poem, it's about 8 or 10 lines. Every line ends with a rhyme on the rose. And so that was basically the, I guess, the model for this poem. Helps to have good models.
Yeah. I agree. When I started out, exactly that's how I began to learn to write poetry, was to use some of those great poets like Neruda and William Carlos Williams and Frost as models, and then did what they call those little imitation poems, building on what they did. So I relate to what you just said.
Yeah, thank you. A question for you, Simon. When you write a poem that is as emotionally evocative as your poem, generally, it's in my experience and from what I've read from other poets, there's that delight in discovery. So maybe you start with an emotion that the experience has brought up, and then as you're writing into that in your inner and you're creating the images, expressing the poem, you'll see more emotions or things that you hadn't discovered will surface. Did you have any of those experiences in writing this poem?
In a sense, I did. The word that comes to mind when you were speaking is that I've layered a series of experiences throughout my life into this poem. So it's like what Billy Collins once said about write a poem about your father and then introduce a mouse into it.
Mm.
So the point in that poem where I began to read those two lines were taken from an experience I had when I went to a Unitarian church service, and in their songbook was a song that contained these two lines, but it was a song that was meant to come from the Buddhist tradition. And so those are layered and taken out of that experience and layered into this to sort of fill it out. To answer the question, what are the two women doing as they move through the temple?
Beautiful. My last comment I'd like to share is a quote from the late David Lynch in closing. He said, trust your inner knowing, go in open. And both Kevin and Simon, I want to thank you for your generosity tonight. I really feel like in your both of your poems, you both went in open. You both went in with a sense of sharing and a communal depth that poets, as a poet myself, I feel like we're seers. You know, we're seekers and seers. And I feel just reading both of your poems to be enlightened further. And I want to thank you. So Simon and Kevin, thank you so much again for joining us. Thank you to our listeners. Please share this podcast with a friend. Check out the entire lineup of excellent podcasts and the Dialogue Podcast Network by visiting dialoguejournal.com. Dialogue Out Loud is produced and edited by Daniel Foster Smith, and our executive producers are Emily Jensen and Taylor Petrie. Thank you, and we'll see you next time.
Greetings, my name is Rebecca DeSchweinitz, and I'm thrilled to serve as a board member at the Dialogue Foundation and as one of the hosts of Dialogue Gospel Study. In each episode, which we record live the second and fourth Sunday of every month, we welcome esteemed speakers from a variety of backgrounds to share their insights and perspectives on the Come Follow Me lessons. Our aim is to spark meaningful conversations about the scriptures, to connect them to our personal experiences and to our understandings and explorations of the gospel. To stay in the loop with our upcoming lessons and this opportunity to engage with Mormon thought, culture, and belief, be sure to visit dialoguejournal.com and sign up for our newsletter. By doing so, you'll receive updates and timely links to join our live stream lessons. Additionally, you can catch up on our past guests and episodes by subscribing to Dialogue Journal on YouTube, Facebook, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Dialogue Podcast Network.